Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome once again to the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Unfortunately, Reggie couldn't join us this week as he's dealing with a death in the family. Our thoughts and prayers go out to him. And, he knows if he needs anything, we're right here. But so many things to get to this week. You know, we talk about the odd celebration penalty. We talk about new head coach in Oakland. We talk about what in the world is going on with the Atlanta Falcons. And also we'll be joined by Icky Woods here in a few minutes. First, I did want to go over our picks from last week real quick and make the ones for this week before we get into all that. We had Green Bay at Chicago, where we all went Green Bay, and I think we all made a good call on that one, as Green Bay rolled in that one. They actually found the offense. We all homered out with Atlanta against Minnesota, and that one didn't quite work out in our favor, but we'll get more into that one a little bit later on. In the Philadelphia-San Francisco game, I took the lone Philadelphia pick out of that one, and you guys both took San Francisco. I don't have the score in front of me. I believe San Francisco hung on for that one, did they not?
They did.
I thought so. And then we all had Baltimore at beating Carolina. We were all correct there. So you guys go 4-0. I go 3-1. I would have to say that's probably one of our best weeks that we've had. So if you want to listen to us on,
what are we saying currently now on the records across the board?
Let's see. Reggie would be 13-3 at this point. You would be 10-6, and I will be 6-10. And I am very happy at 6-10. But we'll slowly catch him. It'll happen. But we do want to do those other picks real quickly, as. We'll start with Atlanta at the New York Giants. Who do you have in that one?
You know, this is going to be very tough, Jeremy. You know, New York is playing. You know, they're always the team that started slow, and
yeah.
Atlanta has a lot of problems to fix right now. And being that they're going to New York to play, it's going to be hard for me to take Atlanta in this one. I'm going to be honest with you. I think they have a lot of things that they have to work on. That you also have to look at all of the injuries that they took from the Minnesota game. I'm going to have to go with New York in this one.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I was expecting so much hate mail for me jumping on that side, because we know Reggie more than likely will be on the Falcons side, as he is a very loyal follower. But I see the Giants on this one, and it's not because I'm riding a hot hand, but the main thing I looked at is this was a coin flip game in my mind, but the thing that flips the coin towards New York is the fact that Atlanta is going on the road, where they have struggled twice already when traveling to Cincinnati and traveling to Minnesota. Now they don't even get a week to come home. They're going to go straight over to New York pretty much. And I just, until proven otherwise, I don't know that this team can play well on the road, depth chart or not.
Yeah, I think they struggle with that right now. And like I said, the injuries compound the issue for me right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly what's going on. We want to go Minnesota at Green Bay, which will be on in a little less than an hour and a half.
It's hard to win in Green Bay. I mean, Green Bay, they just, when they're at home, they're just a team that's hard to beat. They also are coming off a very big win against their rival Chicago. I have to take Green Bay in this game.
Yeah, not just because they're playing at home and not just because they found an offense. I mean, their defense has still got some issues, but if Bridgewater was playing, I would say this could be a possible back-and-forth, you know, head-to-head battle. but I don't feel good for Minnesota in having Christian Ponder, who has never really shaken out for him since getting drafted a couple years ago. So I got Green Bay as well. The next one we have is Arizona at Denver, and I'm going to go ahead and call it now. I feel real good about Denver winning. I mean, about Arizona winning this game, and I think it's going to be really close. It's going to come down to Arizona having the last drive, the last possible thing, and they're going to win with either a touchdown or a field goal.
You know, Jeremy, that's a hard one. That's a very, very hard one for me as well. You know, being that they're playing that game in Denver, if I'm correct in saying so, Arizona yes. travels to Denver to play that game. I like Arizona, too. I think that when I look at the personnel on both sides of the ball, I think Arizona, if suffering some injuries while they're there in that game, they still have a little more depth than Denver does across the board. So I have to agree with you. I like Arizona in this game. I think that they have a lot going for them, and they have a little more depth. So if they take a hit somewhere, whether it be offensively or defensively, they still have enough players to plug and play.
Yep, I absolutely agree. I think it comes down to depth and the fact that so far, if your quarterback's over the age of 34, I believe, they haven't been playing as good as they have been. So I'm not saying they're in decline. They're just not quite as good as they have been. But I do have to give the edge to Arizona there. And in the last game, and not just because our guest has a big affiliation to one of these teams, but the Cincinnati Bengals are going to travel up to Foxborough and play those Patriots. And based off of what I've seen all this year, not just the other night, and based off of the Bengals games I've been able to watch, and from what Reggie told me up close when he got to see him a couple weeks ago, I got the Bengals going 4-0 and taking out the Patriots.
I'm with you on that. I like the Bengals. I like what they do defensively. They're young. They're impactful. They're energetic. And right now, their coach has them on a high right now. And I don't see New England having that high right now. I don't see them and Tom Brady and company just being that team right now. I think they're struggling tremendously. And I think that don't underestimate Cincinnati at all in this game. You know, I think they're going to come in knowing that they're in Foxborough playing this game, knowing that they have to make a statement with this game. And I think if they go out and do what they need to do, they win this game hands down. So I'm with Cincinnati on this one.
Yeah, definitely so. So luckily we all agree here. I feel like Reggie would have went against us in at least one of those, but we'll get with him later on those things. He's got bigger matters, at least as far as I'm concerned. You know, we got a few minutes here before we bring Iggy on. Let's talk about that situation in New England right now. You know, we've kind of went back and forth on this, and for the most part, any kind of inside information that we have until, you know, proven 100% correct, we're not going to, you know, reveal it because it's just a rumor up to that point. But, I mean, from all things we're hearing and that sort of thing, New England could really be in trouble right now.
Yeah, I just think that right now they struggle a lot. And I have not seen Mr. Brady, who normally has this very cool and calm, collected type of demeanor about himself, voice his frustration as much as I've seen him voice him ever, you know, in his career. And I think that is now starting to compound the team as a whole. I think they just have so many problems right now with injuries and trying to find guys that can fit in the right situations. And what went through last year with the receiving core and the inconsistencies that are still there, I would not be surprised that this would be his last year. I think this is the most frustrating thing he's probably ever had as a professional. And I don't know how they correct that in enough time now for him to be satisfied, not just him as the leader of that team, but as a professional. And I think right now he's just so frustrated that he really, really has to take a step back and ask himself, is it time now?
Yeah, I think that's something he's going to have to consider. And, I mean, how crazy would that be? Did anybody have Brady possibly leaving the game before Peyton would? Or did they walk out at the same time? Because, I mean, Peyton's kind of in a similar boat to me as far as at least his team's performing at a pretty high level. But, I mean, I don't see them as a Super Bowl contender, at least how they played up to this point. So, I mean, could we seriously see two high-profile possible Hall of Famers walk out at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, both guys have clearly said that when they felt that they could not perform at the level that they felt comfortable with. Not that they couldn't perform, but perform at that high level that would most definitely keep their organizations in contention. And both of them are struggling right now. I mean, I think that one of the things that brings Mr. Peyton Manning back is because of the high that they were on last year, and he would like to see how close he can get again this year. But this year, you know, with Tom Brady, it's a lot more to this that meets the eye. And, you know, they struggled really bad last year, but they fought back into it, and he saw some potential. But, you know, he's a champion, so he knows what the face of that looks like. And right now, I don't think he's comfortable with anything that's around him right now. I mean, at all, from his line to his receiver to the running game, I just don't see that level of confidence that we've seen in the past with Mr. Brady.
Well, and as we were discussing earlier, you brought up the way Brett Favre kind of, in a way, hung on a little too long. Do you kind of see maybe Peyton or Brady trying to avoid that, and so to not tarnish the legacy?
I do. I mean, you know, at this point now, each year gets tougher. Players are getting faster. Teams are getting stronger. And you just have to ask yourself, you know, when is enough enough? And I would rather them leave the game with some sense of accomplishment than to, and always in the back of their minds, feel that, you know, this was just frustrating. Now I'm just the grumpy old veteran. You know, and I don't want to see either one of those gentlemen, you know, in careers like that.
I definitely don't as well. But I know you're excited for the next segment because I'm super excited as well. We've been talking to him for a good majority of the day, and I'm going to do my best to give a good formal introduction here. Our guest at this time joining us on the celebrity guest line is a former American football fullback. He played his entire career. That was all 3 years with the Cincinnati Bengals. Played college at UNLV. We'll talk a lot about that. He is known for pretty much being one of the innovators of one of the cooler end zone dances and celebrations there ever was. Clearly it'd be a penalty now, but that's a completely different time. Right now I do want to bring on our very special guest, Mr. Icky Woods. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. What's going on, brother?
It's great to have you on, Icky.
Coach, hey, what's up, baby?
How you doing? I'm doing great, Mr. Woods, and yourself?
Oh, man, I'm hanging in. Can't complain. Is my boy Reg on, too?
No, actually, he's going to be joining us today.
Oh, Reg's not going to make it. Okay, well, that's what's up, man. Yeah. How's everything going, guys?
Everything is going quite good.
Good. Happy to hear.
You know, before we get into some of your career highlights and everything, we did our weekly pick'em, and we picked the outcomes of a couple games, and the last game we picked was your Cincinnati Bengals going up to Foxborough to play those New England Patriots. What are your thoughts on this game?
I'm feeling pretty good about my Bengals, man. They off to a great start right now with 3-0. Andy Dalton's playing some great balls, not turning the ball over. Or Giovanni and Hill is running the ball, and we got a very outstanding defense with Burfitt and my sack specialist I got on the end, Dunlap. So those guys are getting it done right now, man. I'm very, 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 very happy to see the way the guys are playing, but I don't want the guys to go down and to New England and think there's going to be a cakewalk down there. You can never underestimate the New England Patriots. They're not playing well right now. I hope we can go down there and come out with a victory. If we play on all cylinders and get some pressure on Tom Brady and make it hard for him to throw the ball, don't give him time to sit back there and pick us apart, I think we have a great chance of getting it done. Their offensive line is not as good as it's been in the past, so I think we can go down there and beat them in New England, because they're not a very, very good team right now, but you can never count any team out. They're playing at home, so teams play real, real defensive and good at home. So hopefully we can go down there and put our game together and make it happen, man. It would be very exciting if we can go down there and win that one in New England.
Well, me and Coach Hill both had Cincinnati taking this game, and especially since it was a part of your background, I definitely see that two of the big keys to the success this year for the Bengals have been not only the front seven on the defense, who are arguably as good as anybody else in the league, but they've developed quite the run game, as you talked about. You know, you got Giovanni Bernard, you got Jeremy Hill, Cedric Pierman, Rex Burkhead, and I mean, these guys are just almost setting the bar each week to help set up Andy Dalton's passing game.
Yeah, and that helps it out, man. I know the year that we went to the bowl, we had a very outstanding run game, and Boomer was one of the best play action passers in the game. So hopefully we can get those guys to work on all cylinders. But I think a key, very, very key success to our success is Andy Dalton's not turning the ball over.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And so far he's been doing a real good job. Honestly, and I don't want to jinx him, I'm knocking on wood right here in the studio just to make sure of it, but he's actually one of the first quarterbacks to get a big deal like that and actually perform the following year. So it's actually looking pretty good for the Red Rifle.
Oh, yeah, the Red Rifle's doing a great job, man. And, you know, but you know as well as I do, it starts up front, man. We have those guys up front. We got a rookie center who's stepped in and doing a great job. We got a couple of wily veterans at the guards and tackles. So we have a much maligned and experienced offensive line. So, and those guys have been playing together 3 to 4 to 5 years. So I think that's key. And then we got the Giovanni's going into his second year. We got the rookie Hill coming in, and those guys are opening up holes. And you know, with Giovanni, he can not only beat you carrying the ball, he can also beat you as a pass catcher too. So that's another plus that we have with him.
Coach, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Jeremy. My question to you, Icky, is as you look at this team and the game now versus the game then, no pun intended, how close is this team in resemblance to the team that you were on when you guys went to the Super Bowl? How close are they, personnel-wise?
Well, I think personnel-wise they're close like we were, because the Giovanni is sort of the James Brooks of the crew. He runs the ball well and can beat you on not only the run but the pass. The Hill kid's a great downhill rusher like I was. You know, you give him the ball, you need a couple of yards, he's going to hit it up inside and get them for you. And then we have Grissom. You know, kind of we lost Alford, but Griffin steps in, and he's kind of like our Rodney Holman. And then you have A.J. Green. We didn't have a tall receiver as A.J. Green is, but we did have Eddie Brown, whose hands was like glue once the ball was in the air. And then we had the speedster Tim McGee on that side, and Marvin Jones stepped up and did a lot of stuff that Tim did for us, but he's been hurt, and Sanu has stepped in and done a great job as well. So those guys resemble us a whole lot. I think their defense is a little better than our defense was back then, but we had a decent defense as well. But I think they have a little more talent on their defense than we had.
Yeah, it's funny. You guys just took the words right out of my mouth with some of the players I was going to just compare those to. Those are great comparisons with Brooks and Logan and all those guys. You know, given some of the – we'll just go over some of the pro guys you played with here. You know, tell everybody for the listening audience that definitely didn't get a chance to play with these guys, you know, what's it like to play with, you know, the James Brooks and the Ray Hortons and the Boomer Esiasons, the Chris Collinsworth, because – you know, most people nowadays only know Chris Collinsworth as the guy who talks during football games. But, I mean, these guys are some of the elite players, just like yourself. What was it like to be on the field with them?
Well, it was great to be on the field with them, to actually watch them as I was growing up playing on the field, and then to actually be in the huddle and in the backfield with the likes of Boomer Esiason and Anthony Munoz and Max Montoya, you know, those type of guys. And James Brooks, you know, grew up watching him play, Tim McGee, Eddie Brown. I grew up watching all those guys play, and to be on the same field, and then once you get on there, then you play against other players on other teams that you grew up watching, and you wanted to try to, you know, especially if you played another running back who you grew up watching, you wanted to try to outbeat them and, you know, maybe score more yards or get a couple more touchdowns, maybe outperform them on that day. And it was just – it was awesome. It was an awesome feeling just, you know, being on the field with guys that you actually, you know, actually grew up watching, and to be able to get out there and play against them, and then after the game, you know, go shake their hands and, you know, get to know those guys. But once you get in that brotherhood, you're always a part of that brotherhood.
Go ahead, Coach.
Okay. I have one other question for you. Looking at the speed of the game from then to now, how fast has the game progressed, in your opinion, from then to now?
Coach says it has progressed a whole lot, man. You know, we didn't have D linemen that could run a 4.45. You know, most of our D linemen, they were in the 4.8s and 4.9s. The offensive linemen were, you know, 5 flat, 5 ones, and you know, now you got defensive linemen running 4.44 and 4.5, and offensive linemen running 4.6s and 4.7s. The game has got a lot faster than it was when I was playing.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely the speed of the game, and here in a second, if any of our callers have any questions, feel free to call in and ask us or Mickey Woods any questions. Our number is 347-826-7448. And as far as comparing when you played, and once again, that's no disrespect because that was not that long ago. As far as the health and nutrition of the game, how has that evolved nowadays?
Oh, it's evolved a hundredfold, and yeah, it was a long time ago because I played over 25 years ago. So,
that wasn't that long ago.
you know, they're more health conscious now than they were back when I played, and you know, and technology has gotten a lot better as well. You know, so the technology that they have now as far as the injuries, healing a lot faster and being able to put knees and shoulders and everything back together quicker than they did when I was coming through. With a ACL, when I was coming through, it was a year and a half process to get back on the field. Now, you know, if you get an ACL, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 months, you're back out there on the field. So the technology has gotten a lot better now.
Yeah, it absolutely has, and I mean, I'm still amazed looking over this roster of all the guys, and that you guys had quite the special team back in. I'm looking at the '88 team, which was your rookie year, correct?
Yeah, my rookie year, yeah.
I mean, it is stacked with it. I mean, if I'm playing, you know, a Madden video game, I'm going to try to get most of these guys on my team as much as I can. Just, I mean, how special was that?
Back then, even our second and third team guys were great ball players, you know. So we had it was just awesome to have all the, almost all the guys have the same ability, just about the same ability. So when one came out, the next one stepped in, and we didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, and that is key. And how special was it to play in Cincinnati back in the late 80s, early 90s?
Well, it was real special. It was real special to get in there and have some fun, you know, because Cincinnati – before I got there. They was in the Super Bowl in 81, and then they had a law there for about 7-8 years where they didn't really do anything, and then our group came in and we were able to come together, and they had a something going on. The year before I came in was the strike year, and they had a big problem with inter squad racial things going on. They had inter team fighting. So when I got there, Sam Weiss had started rooming the defensive players with the offensive players, the black guys with the white guys. And so he made it to where we got to know each other. And when that happened, we were not only a great team, but we were a family. You know, we did everything together. We went out and partied together. We had cookouts, and we just hung out together all the time. We were like a family, and that was, I think, a key to us being together on one accord and winning ball games.
And, you know, real quickly, we'll get into your days at UNLV. You played with some pretty interesting characters over there. I believe you played a couple years with Randall Cunningham.
Yep, Randall Cunningham, played a couple of years with him, played a couple of years with Suge Knight, you know, big record producer guru, played a couple of years with that guy, a couple of years with Charles Demery, who made it to the league, George Thomas. We had a few guys make it to the league, but I think me and Randall was probably the biggest. When I got there, Randall was a senior. And, man, he was just an unbelievable talent. He was not only our quarterback, he was our punter as well. So he was an All-American punter, All-American quarterback. So he done it all.
Well, real quickly, I know Coach has got a couple questions too, but real quickly, what kind of ball player and what kind of person was Suge Knight back in the day? Because, you know, a lot of people know about Cunningham, but a lot of people didn't realize Suge Knight played on that team with you guys.
Yeah, yeah, he was on there. You know, Suge Knight, he was a defensive lineman, you know, and he was a good guy, man. He was, you know, he was real guy, real nice guy to talk to, real calm and cool, and you know, and I still think he's a calm and cool guy, but you know, he got a persona about himself now, but it's the way it was back then, man. Yeah, I guess that was the way he dealt with a lot of stuff, you know, being a tough guy.
I have one final question for you, Icky.
Yes.
This question can either rest in college or you can fast forward it to the pros. Who was the best defensive player that you've ever played against?
The best defensive player I ever played against. I'd have to say Mike Singletary.
Okay,
down in Chicago, my second year, I think was his last year. But man, this guy was unbelievable. And you know, you could, when you look across the ball and you look at that guy, man, you can tell he was intense and he played at 100 miles an hour all the time. So I'd have to say Singletary was probably the best defensive player I played against. I didn't get a chance to play against LT, so I can't say that he was the best one I played against. But you also had Greg Lloyd in Pittsburgh, too. He was a good one as well.
Wow, those are definitely two big names in the game for sure. You know, let's talk a little bit about your post-football stuff. You know, since exiting the league back in 91, what have you been up to?
Man, I did a bunch of this, a bunch of that. I sold meat to raise to help feed the family. I got into sales a little bit, done some sales. Then, I guess 2000, right around 2000, 2004, I started a youth foundation where I working with inner city kids, helping them to, you know, find a better way to cope with life. And then in 2010, my heart was just taken out of my chest because I lost my 16-year-old son to asthma. And I started a foundation in his name called the Javonte Woods Foundation. And that's what I do now. I go around the country raising money for asthma research, education, and organ donation. He was also an organ donor. Unbeknownst to me and his mom, he had checked yes on his driving permit that he wanted to be an organ donor. And we honored that, and he was able to save four lives with his organs and help countless others with his tissues. So we're very, very proud of that. And then we also have an educational piece to our foundation. He was a straight-A student, and we have a piece called the Javonte Woods 3.8 to Be Great Scholarship that we give away to young men and young women who are going off to college. You have to have a 3.8 to qualify, and you also have to be an athlete that's trying to go off to college.
Wow, that is some great, amazing stuff. And how can people learn more about the Javonte Woods Foundation?
Well, you can go to the website. We have a website. It's Javonte, is spelled Javante, woodsfoundation.org. If you want to go on the website, you can go on the website and donate as well. If you want to help a worthy cause of us fighting this deadly disease called asthma, because before it took my son from me, I was real naive about asthma, even though we suffered with it since he was two and fought it for 14 years, thought we had it under control, thought we knew everything there was to know about asthma. And then one day it slapped us in the face and took my son from me. And we started doing some research and find out that we didn't know as much about asthma as we thought we did. So did some research and come to find out that asthma is the fastest growing disease in America, but it's the least amount of money, if not to find a cure, find a better way to treat it. And then also in kids from the age, being born to the age 19, in the last 10 years, asthma has risen 80% in our children. And the real alarming statistic that just blew me away, I just couldn't believe it, is that 11 people a day die from asthma. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. We have this many people a day dying from asthma, and nobody's doing anything about it. And so we decided to start the foundation. And over the past 3 to 4 years, we've been able to donate over 50,000 to children's asthma research, and we've been able to give out over 20,000 in scholarships. But we're just scratching the surface, and we're trying to do more and more to fight this deadly disease. So if you have the kindness in your heart, go to our website and donate so we can fight this deadly disease that's sweeping the country.
Wow, those numbers are alarming. I didn't even know all those, and it is becoming a bigger issue. When I found out you're going to be able to come on the show, I started researching some of them, and those numbers are just staggering. We do need to start doing something about that, and it's good that you have a foundation set up to help educate people, if nothing else.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
I want everyone that's listening to the show tonight to make sure that you go out, you donate to Mr. Wood's Sons Foundation. Make sure that you support this. I actually myself, if you have two boys who have been diagnosed with asthma, so I know that process. I most definitely want to encourage everyone to go out and donate today.
Yeah, definitely, and that is JavonteWoodsFoundation.org if you want to donate that, and I'll post all this up on our show website as well, so that anybody who wants to find this information definitely can. Real quickly, we're in the last few minutes here of our end zone segment before we get into some Falcon Zone stuff here in a minute. Now, I was talking with you earlier today. You still have ownership in the Cincinnati Sizzle Women's Football Alliance team, correct?
Yeah, uh-huh.
How did you get into that?
Well, I was sitting at home, and I was still married at the time, and my ex-wife came to me and said that she was going to try out for the women's football team that was coming to Cincinnati. And, you know, I kind of laughed and giggled and sarcastically said to her, well, okay, you're going to try out for the team. If you make the team, then I'll help coach. and she, you know, I didn't think she was serious. And so she came home, honey, guess what? And I was like, oh, you got me twisted. I'm not coaching no women's team. And she said, you said you would. And I said, well, all right, since I'm a man of my word and I said I would do it, all right. So, you know, I took it on then, and to my surprise, there was some women who can play the game, and I've been doing the women's football for going on 11 years now.
Wow. And, yeah, definitely women are starting to make a splash, even in the men's game. And I know Coach knows a lot more about where I'm probably going with this. But the Texas Revolution of the Indoor Football League, I believe they're in a different league this year, had Jen Welter, who started a couple games at tailback for them and actually had a couple carries and everything like that. But, yeah, women are slowly breaking the barrier here, and it might not be that much longer before we see women in the men's ranks.
In the men's rank as in playing with men?
Correct. I mean, because when Jen Welter played, she played against men in the indoor league. Now, it'll be a while before – it gets to the NFL ranks, but
it won't ever get to the NFL. And the reason I say that is just because, you know, women playing women make for a good game, but women playing against men, their bodies are just not physically able to endure the punishment that men's body take. They're just not physically built that way. And, you know, it would be nice to see a woman out there, but I don't personally think it would ever happen. I've been wrong in my life, but you know, I don't think a woman can play with men on the same level. But a professional women's team where you have women against women, which makes for a great game, I think that's gonna. That's going to come to fruition a lot quicker than a woman trying to play on a man's team.
Well, speaking of how people perform based off or just how people perform, tell us, I guess, kind of the backstory of how the Icky Shuffle come about.
Oh, man, I was sitting at home with my mom. I flew her in for a game against the Cleveland Browns. And I was sitting up acting silly. My two oldest kids, Jermaine and Amber, at the time were five and two, and we were up just dancing and having a merry old time, listening to some music. And I was like, Mom, if I score tomorrow, this is what I'm gonna do. And she's like, Boy, you better not do that. I was like, Yeah, Mom, I got to. So I scored, and it kind of started off where I just took my hands in between my legs, jumped, hopped in the air, and just went back and forth with my hands. And Ricky Dixon, who was our first-round draft choice that year, he came up to me, Woods, man, what was that? I said, oh, Rick, that was my celebration dance. He was like, man, that was whack. That was whack. I said, what? He said, yeah, Rick, that was whack. I said, so what you think I ought to do, Rick? You think I ought to put some steps to it? He was like, yeah, man, I think you should put some steps to it. So I said, okay. So the whole week I thought about what I could do. I couldn't come up with nothing. And then 5 minutes before it was time to go out and get warmed up for the game, it just hit me. I said, Rick, check this out. This is what I'm going to do when I score. I'm going to go 1, 2, 3 to the right, 1, 2, 3 to the left, one, two, three, back to the right, and I'm going to hop back three times and spike the ball. He was like, oh, yeah, Ig, man, that's going to be live. That's going to be live. And so I just tell everybody I was fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time. We were winning ball games, and we were on our way to the Super Bowl, and I was fortunate enough that it caught on.
Oh, it more than caught on. You are officially synonymous in NFL talks for sure. As you know, that because that was really at the time there weren't a lot of, you know, big productions in the end zone as far as dances and even right now in the pregame of tonight's game, they're showing some dances up here. I'm waiting to see if they'll show yours. Don't know if they will, but. You know, you were really kind of a pioneer in a way of showing people you can have a little bit of a little bit of flair and, you know, put your own personal touches on something. Yeah, do you kind of see yourself as a trendsetter?
I'm not going to necessarily say that because, you know, I like to tell everybody, you know, hey, Billy White's Shoes started doing the celebration with the funky chicken. I kind of just took it to another level. That's all.
Was definitely entertaining and will quickly spawn
and
into.
He was one of y'all. He was a Atlanta Falcon.
He was actually at the Thursday night game against the Buccaneers. They honored him. He was down in the corner of one end zone and he just started tearing it up like he used to, and that place was going bananas.
That's my guy right there, man. That's my guy. Billy White Shoes. Yes, sir.
Go ahead,
I have
Coach.
A quick question. First of all, I want to congratulate you, Mr. Woods, on your newfound success in commercials. I did have opportunity to see the Geico commercial and your dance that you are most famously known for. Most definitely has made itself back or into the minds of not only football players, fans who have known you from the past, but even the young kids of the day as they speak of the Icky Shuffle. I want to first congratulate you on that. The second thing I wanted to ask you, how did you get the nickname Icky? How did that come about?
I was one and my older brother was two. My birth given name is Albert, and he couldn't pronounce Albert, so he used to call me E.E. all the time. And so to make it easier for my brother, my mom said that I looked like this cartoon character who used to come on whose name resembled Icky. So to make it easier for my brother, she started calling me Icky, and it's kind of ironic because his name was Cokey, and we grew up Cokey and Icky.
Okay, wow. Okay.
That
sounds like a new show. I mean, we need to start pitching this to networks, the Icky and Cokey show. I think this could catch on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, you know, if nothing else besides being entertaining and hopefully selling a lot of insurance, the Geico commercial has reminded everybody of all the positive things that you've done and the impact you've made on the game and on the world in general, especially with the Javonte Woods Foundation and everything. So, because I know when it came on, I just started looking, and I was like, hey, that's Icky Woods. And I was around a bunch of non-football fans who just turned and looked at me. So I started filling them in on all that. They're like, oh, I remember that guy. And I was it's this whole new – it's like we're getting a chance to show the new generation all the cool people we had, you know, a couple years ago. And it was really cool, and by far it's one of my favorite commercials right now.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And I had heard that some of that was unscripted. How much of that was unscripted, and how much of that was actually just off the top of your head?
Well, a lot of it, most of it was they told me what they wanted, and I put my own turn to it, and the end part where I'm jumping around. Woo! I'm gonna get some cold cuts today. I threw that in. That wasn't a part of the script at all. So I threw that last part in, and they loved it and wanted to keep it. But they kind of told me what they wanted, and I really didn't have a script. They just told me what they wanted, and when I started doing it, They would tell me to do more of this or more of that, but pretty much everything was me, and I just whatever they asked me to do, I did.
Well, I thought you did quite well, and it's not just because I'm talking to you here on the show, but you know, you may have a future in acting here. We may try to get you an agent and get you in some of these new movies.
That sounds good to me. We'll make it happen.
But real quickly, there was just a couple of things we were going to talk about on the show, and we'll get your take on them as well. I don't know how much you keep up with things in the league, but the Chiefs safety, Hussein Abdullah, was penalized for his end zone celebration. Now, they went back and the league's apologized initially and said it didn't have anything to do with the fact that he prayed, I believe it was the Islamic praying he was doing at the end. They said the penalty was for the fact that he slid on his knees into the end zone.
Right. He didn't actually slide. He was already in the end zone when he went into his slide, and I think that was one of the reasons they penalized him. I don't think it was like they said. It wasn't because he prayed. It was the beforehand antics that he did, was the sliding once he got into the end zone, slid on his knees, and, you know. But, you know, hey, the kid was happy, you know, so I can't blame him, and I wish they would, you know, let the guys do a little bit more, because, you know, I'm all about celebrating when you score a touchdown. So I don't have anything against it. I was kind of upset when I seen the flag come down. I was like, what they flagging him for? What did he do, you know? And then I say, well, okay, well, they got him for a knee slide. Okay, well, that's crazy. But, you know, it's the NFL, the no fun league, they say.
And, Coach, do you have more on this? I believe you were looking into it further.
Okay. I do. As a matter of fact, the rule in the NFL states, and here's the rule as I read it, it's Rule 12, Section 3, Article 1B. Players are prohibited from engaging in any celebrations or demonstrations while on the ground. However, the officiating mechanic in this situation is not to flag a player who goes to the ground as part of religious expression, and as a result, there should have been no penalty on the play. I want to expand on that just a little further, guys, if I can, by saying I'm curious to know, with some of the injuries that have happened in college with some players, I don't know of many that have happened. Well, you know, most recently what we had with Jackson in Atlanta last year, I want to kind of focus this towards you, Mr. Williams. Do you think that's probably part of the reason why they're trying to reduce this type of celebratory act in the end zone because of the injuries that it might cause?
Yeah, you know, because there's guys, and I don't want to.
I think we're having technical difficulties there. We'll try to get Icky's line back straightened out. But
okay. While we're waiting on that, Jeremy, one of the things I wanted to point out is that as a coach, we most definitely want players to be able to express themselves. And I noticed that in this particular ruling, or the rule that they have, is that when you're talking about religious expression. So now the question is going to be, based on all of the different religions that we have, what is going to be deemed next offensive versus non-offensive? I think the slide is what drew the flag and why there was a discussion that took place, and the way that they fixed it was not fine the player for that. But I think overall, when you're talking about celebrating the expressions, I mean, if you start to take certain elements out of the game, then where's the excitement in the game? I don't have a problem with celebrating. I think that there should be some type of ruling about how you celebrate, because you don't want to offend people, but neither do you want players to be injured or hurt. One of the things I noticed that you see all the time in college football, when guys jump up and they chest bump, and, you know, a player from Georgia last year came down and tore his ACL. He's out for the rest of the season. Back in the day, not too far long ago, and you probably still see some of this now, when guys kind of dogpile on top of players, and, you know, now you got injuries that occur that way. So I do understand why you need the ruling, but I also think that there needs to be, there should be a level of flexibility in the rule, in my opinion, because you just don't want to take away all of the celebratory acts. I mean, that's the whole point of getting to the end zone. I'm sorry, that's the whole point of why players want to celebrate, and the fans appreciate it as well. I mean, at this point now, did you take away the Lambeau Leap? You still see it, but are players being fined for it? So that's all this stuff is going to come, but doesn't come out in the wash. I guess what I'm trying to say is going to come out in the rinse. And some of these places where they have these traditions, very well might see these things go away.
And do we have you back on, Icky?
Yeah, we're back here. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. I just you were talking and we lost you, and I was like, wait a minute, something happened here. But we got you back on, and Coach, if you want to repeat that question you had for him,
Sure. What my question was to Mr. Woods is the fact that we have the celebratory expressions. Now, as a coach, I know that there have been times I've cringed when I see players going to the end zone to celebrate because now you have the chest bumping and some other things. And I do understand that there has to be something to protect players as well because owners want to protect their investment. There was a player in Georgia last year who jumped up and did a chest bump and came down and tore his ACL. Yes, Stevie Jackson, as I mentioned earlier, who leaked last year and was out, if not three-fourths of the season due to thigh contusions and some other things. So I guess my question is, you don't want to take away celebrations, but then where is the line going to be drawn because you have the famous Lambeau Leap, and what happens if you see that tonight? So, I guess my question is, where do they draw the line where you can celebrate because you don't want to take that away from the players, you don't want to most definitely take that away from the fans, but how do you protect the players and how they celebrate.
Right, right. And that is, like they're trying to do. If one guy wants to celebrate, it's good. Let him go ahead and do his own thing without, other guys joining in. Like you said, the guys doing the chest bump. Every time guys do that, I get nervous because somebody can come down wrong, and like you said, Coach, it's an ACL. They're out for the year, there goes an Achilles. They're out for the year, or they fall down, and maybe a wrist or something, and they're out 8 games. So, like me, what I did is I celebrated by myself, and then at the end of my celebration, when we had to take it to the sideline, I had my guys come in and we threw the little woo woo at the end of it, So it was there's ways to celebrate, They made me take mine to the sideline. I couldn't do it in the end zone anymore, which was, a bunch of bull. But it's all right. We're gonna roll with it.
Right. And the other part of that I noticed in the actual rule itself. It says that you would not be penalized for someone going to the ground for religious expression. And so that's the other part of it to me that's kind of toothy, if you will, for the lack of better terms, in the actual rule, because at what point do you say that this type of religious expression is offensive versus this type that is not offensive? So I think there's still a gray area even there when you're talking about religious expression on what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
Yeah, that is so true too, Coach. But just going to a knee and pointing up in the air, like most guys do, is not offensive at all. And I think if the young kid wouldn't have slid on his knees and just dropped to his knees and did his religious thing, I don't think he would have got penalized for that. I think the whole thing. Reason he got penalized is he slid on his knees and then did his, his prayer. So I think that was the whole emphasis on that. But, it's ticky-tacky, but, that's the NFL.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I don't know your time schedule there, Icky, but we're about to jump into some Falcon Zone topics. You want to hang out with us for a little while?
Yeah, I hang out and talk about the Falcons, man. I got a few words I need to say about them anyway, man, with they wishy-washy sales, man.
You don't know, they start off the first game of the year, they do great. Then they come down to Cincinnati, and we spank them up real good, send them back home. Then they go Thursday night and just beat the dog out of Tampa Bay. And then the next week they come back and let rookie look like a 10-year vet, man. I just can't understand it. I don't know what the and then on top of that, not only that, you guys lose three offensive lineman starters, man. That's just so bad, man. So bad.
Well, let me cue up the music and we'll jump right into the Falcon Zone. That's right. We are here for the Falcon Zone, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill, and, of course, Cincinnati running back legend, Icky Woods. How we doing, guys?
Doing good. Doing great.
Doing good, Jeremy.
It's as much as I like Seven Dust and as much as I like that song, if you're over here in near Atlanta or if you're a Falcons fan, it's probably hard to hear the words Falcons on top. But as you were getting to Icky, I think Reggie would appreciate me saying that too. But as you were getting to, yeah, they've the Falcons in general have kind of been up and down this year. And you know, as we we'll start by talking about the game they played against the Vikings, where to me it just looks like not only injury wise, you know, even the offensive line wasn't that bad, even with the makeshift line they made towards the end. It just seems to me that they can't travel out of town, especially to the Northeast, and do very well at all. This depth that Dimitrov told us about is not really there.
Coach?
Well, yes, I'd like to go ahead and talk about that. One of the things as a coach, and I think you can attest to this, Icky, and you've heard it 1,000 times in your career, when you're traveling on the road, the practice is very, very intense. Very intense, very focused, and as all practices are, but going on the road, you have a couple of unseen opponents. And I've spoken this before in a couple of segments earlier in the year. You not only have your opponent that you're going against, but you have the road. You're on the road. All the logistics that go into that. You have the officials. You have the crowd. So you have some opponents that would not be on the field, but that can affect things that happen while you're on the field. So when you go on the road, you have to really take in consideration. You have to go out and you have to take this team early, fast, and quick. And when the opportunities are there, you cannot have the turnovers. You have to get the points, whether they're field goals, safeties. You have to score to keep yourself in the mix. And I think what happened in this game is Atlanta came out very, very slow. They looked very sluggish. They did not look focused at all. And what was surprising is the fact they went to Minnesota. They played outdoors. They played on the artificial turf. The weather was nice, so it wasn't something they were unfamiliar with. But to allow Bridgewater to come in, and I always think going into the draft, this kid was a very good quarterback. But I felt that Minnesota was missing their leader, and that was in Peterson. But somehow, some way, they have found to establish a running game and a 1-2 punch, and they just. I mean, Atlanta could not stop the run on the right side of the ball for nothing. I mean, Bridgewater threw the high-percentage passes. The receivers had their way, and Atlanta just really got to fight. They have a lot of issues right there. They got to get resolved quickly if they're going to put themselves in contention.
So, Icky, you've actually played games on the road before. You know, kind of describe for us, as Coach said, how different is it between playing at home and playing on the road?
Oh, man, it's very, very different, man, because, you know, for one, you know, it's not your crowd, and so everything that you do, you're not going to hear the roar, and everything that they do, they will hit a roar. And, you know, being a player, you feed off of that vibe, especially when you're at home. A lot of teams play better when they're at home because you got that crowd behind you. And like Coach said, the refs, you know, are normally favorite of home team some of the time, and then the crowd again. So especially in an atmosphere, I know we used to practice when we went up to Houston and Cleveland and places like that. We used to bring a big loudspeaker outside, and we would practice with just noise going because we knew that if we got in a situation where we were deep in our territory, had ourselves backed up against the goal line, that we were really going to hear a lot of noise from the crowd, so we had to be able to communicate through that 12-man noise.
And where is the loudest away stadium you played at? I've heard a bunch of different things over the years, but where's the loudest place you played?
The loudest we played was in Seattle.
Wow.
Yeah, Seahawks were pretty loud. Now the Steelers was loud, and also the Browns were pretty loud too. But I think the loudest we played, I think, was in Seattle. That's when they had the dome, so you know, the Superdome back then. So we went into there, and man, you talking about loud, boy, it was unbelievably loud in there.
Yep, that is one of the two answers I always hear from players that's played in the league is either Seattle or Kansas City. So those places are always loud, and their crowd, regardless of what the team's doing on the field, are always loud and on top of things. But jumping back into the Falcons, I know you got to see them when they came to Cincinnati. What's your outlook on them as far as what you've seen this season and where you kind of see them headed?
They're up and down team right now. You know, I think they've won both of their games at home and hadn't won a game on the road yet. So, like you say, they play good at home. But you know, I tell everybody, if you're a team and you can win all your home games and split on the road, you finish 12-4 and you have a good year. So they're 2-2 right now, so they're still in the thick of things in their division. So, but the one thing you got to do is you got to win your division games, and I think you guys are playing in a pretty tough division too.
Yes, the NFC South is always very competitive. Every game goes down to the wire, regardless of what the records of the teams are. And it's funny that you broke it down that way, because that's always been kind of, in the last couple of years, the way I preach to teams is that if you can win 7 or 8 games at home and you can go .500 on the road, you pretty much will be in the playoffs every year.
Because you're 12-4 or 11-5, you know.
So,
you're pretty much going to be in the playoffs. And if you beat the right teams and win your division, then you may have a home game. You want to try to get them home games. You know, it's tough when playoff time comes and you got to play on the road. You know, it's tough to do that, but you know, some teams can get it done. You know, actually, some teams play better on the road. So you know, I don't hardly understand that. But there is a lot of teams that play a lot better on the road than they do at home, you know.
Yeah. It's weird how some teams are better on the road like that. But to catch people up real quick.
You guys got the New York Giants this week, huh?
Yes. We're going to get to that game here in a second, actually.
Yeah, you guys play them up in New York?
Yes, that game is at the New Meadowlands. So that's another northeast travel trip for the Falcons. We'll jump into that in a second. I was going to catch everybody up real quick on the injury report. Center Joe Hawley is out for the year with a knee injury. Offensive lineman Lamar Holmes is also out for the year after his leg injury. safety William Moore is on the IR with the designation to return. That means that it's a minimum of 6 weeks before he can come back. But to me, the biggest of those three is Joe Hawley, because besides Matt Ryan, he's the leader of that offense. When they get in the huddle, he's the cheerleader and the pep talker. So replacing a center like that is going to be huge.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's the heart and soul of the offensive line. And, you know, hopefully the backup guy is can get in there and get the job done. You know, normally when you have a guy who's been the mainstay of that offensive line goes down, hopefully he has tutored his replacement enough for this guy to come in. And they're going to miss him, but if he can step in and do just a halfway decent job, think they'll be okay.
Yeah, I agree with you, Icky. I think that one of the things I've always said as a coach is that it doesn't matter how many players you play, is that you're paid to perform. And so mentally being prepared, physically being prepared, and stepping right in, you're not just in the NFL by chance. You're there because someone is evaluated, you've gone through a rigorous testing, and you're there because you have the ability to play. So now it's just a matter of Matt Ryan getting comfortable with the center, the quarterback center exchange, and making sure that he can get comfortable with those snaps, getting his rhythm down, making sure that he can make the proper checks on the line for the blitzes. And I think they'll be okay. I still predict them to be 11-5. I saw that just saying this. And now Matt Ryan has to go back and prove he can win on the road now with this team, and he's going to have to plug in with a lot of different – I mean, they're playing with a mass shooter on the offensive line right now. But, again, you know, guys are being paid to perform, and it doesn't matter how many plays they play. When you step in, you have to go – when your number's called, you have to step in and make the best possible play at that moment.
Yeah, that is definitely the case. And they were able to sign safety Sean Baker, tackle Cameron Bradfield, and guard Harlan Gunn. And they're on the main squad. They signed safety Kamario McFadden and guard Adam Replogle to the practice squad. And to Falcons fans, or at least anybody that watched Hard Knocks earlier this year, those names should all sound familiar. They have been in and around the team since March. So, you know, feel good about that. But, you know, let's get into previewing this Falcons-Giants game. And, you know, to me, it's a coin flip game. And the thing that decides it the most to me is the Falcons have not traveled well this year, and I feel like Eli is finding a touch. He's found a tight end that he loves, and anybody named Manning that finds a tight end will throw to him until he falls over. So I've actually got the Giants in this game. How do you guys see this shaking out?
Well, I'm going to the way Eli has played the last couple of games, man, he's looked like he's back to the Super Bowl form that he did in the two Super Bowls that he's won, and the team is playing on all cylinders, and they playing at home, so I think I'm gonna have to go with the Giants as well.
Naturally, I stated earlier that until Atlanta can prove that they can win on the road, what doesn't come out in the wash comes out in the rinse. And right now they haven't been very competitive on the road, so I have to take New York in this. So I agree with both of you guys that, you know, Eli's playing very well. You're going to the New Meadowlands to play this game. You haven't been competitive with anyone on the road right now, so I have to take Atlanta. I mean, I'm sorry, I have to take New York in this as well.
Yeah, and it's like I say a lot of weeks, and I think there's only been one other week that I didn't pick Atlanta, and that they happened to win that one. But I'm not jumping all over Atlanta because they're the main fan base that we talk about in this one. It's just, you know, I want them to prove me wrong for the most part. And, you know, Coach, you've said the same thing, and I know Icky, you probably believe the same way. It's like you see this team, and on paper they look like they should be this juggernaut and an instant, you know, successful playoff team, and then they get to the playoffs and it just doesn't quite work out, or suddenly they underperform like they're doing right now. I mean, I know with Cincinnati you've watched up there, Icky, that the last 3 years you guys have made the playoffs, but you didn't get that win yet. This team looks like it's a little different for once, but I mean, you know, I guess Cincinnati fans can identify the same way Falcons fans do with the not having success past the regular season yet, but it looks like you guys turned the corner.
Well, yeah, it looks like we, you know, we got a decent team, man. But like I said, it's a long season, man. We still have 13 more games left, so you know, I can't even put them in the playoffs right now, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. I hope they keep playing as great as they're playing right now, but you also got to take into account injuries. You know, you never know when someone's going to get hurt. You never know when turnovers play a factor, you know, and Chris Berman said it best. The best team don't always win. That's why we play the game.
Exactly.
I agree 100%. I think one of the things I like to add with the situation with Atlanta going into New York is that now you get an opportunity to see what you have in the depth. I've always looked at the teams that have won and who made it to the dance, as we like to call it, or to the show. If you look at historically what they've done, they've had a good rotation of those players. So if you have players get too comfortable at their position and don't challenge that position often enough with players, you know, signing more players and seeing this opportunity and practice and being transitioning stuff to the game, I think that is where everything pans out. We're going to see now exactly what Atlanta has on the offensive line as far as the depth is concerned, just because of the injuries that they faced in the Minnesota game.
Yep, that is definitely true. And real quickly, as we're winding down here on the show, Icky, who do you see out there on the current Bengals roster, or even currently in the league, that you feel plays the game the way you did?
As far as running backs are concerned,
yes.
I like the kid down in Murray, down in Dallas.
DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, DeMarco Murray. Yeah. He runs downhill. He may have a little more speed than I had, but you know, he's that type of downhill runner. He's not going to do a lot of juking. He's going to make that one cut, maybe two cuts, and then he's gone. You know, he's a hit him up in their back. And that's I think he's more the type of runner that I was when I played.
Well, maybe we can try to reach out to him and get him to throw in a shuffle next time he's in the end zone.
You sound like a plan to me.
Do you get a chance to go to a lot of games in Cincinnati?
Yeah, I go to all the Bengals home games because I run a couple of concession stands at the stadium to raise money for my son's foundation. So I'm at all the home games.
So that's also another way that people could help your foundation you set up for your son is if you're in the Cincinnati area, go to these home games. You get a chance to meet Icky Woods and to help out a great cause and to eat some good food because there's some really good food at that place.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But that's going to pretty much do it for this week. We do appreciate you calling in, Icky, and we'd love to have you back at any time. If people want to find out more about your foundation, it's JavonteWoodsFoundation.org, and that's JavonteWoodsFoundation.org, correct?
That is correct.
And as always, if you want to check in with the show, it's at 3endzone or at the Impact 99 on Twitter. We are on Facebook as well. You can find all the Impact Media stuff on iTunes in case you want to go back and listen to this again. And you can email the show, 3endzone@gmail.com. Do you guys have any parting words before we get out of here?
Hey, man, you guys enjoy, man. I appreciate it. And please help us out and go make a donation. And go Falcons.
I want to thank Mr. Woods for joining us for both shows. Most definitely, I want all the listeners from End Zone as well as Falcon Zone and all of our other segments of our show to most definitely go out and donate to the foundation.
Yeah, definitely look into this and reach out. And if you can't donate, then help educate others on it and, you know, help really try to bring attention to this because it could be a lot bigger issue if we don't really start and try to do something about it now. But for Coach Haywood Hill, and Cincinnati legend Icky Woods, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.